Hey guys, welcome to the 5-1 Volleyball Podcast, where we talk about the wonderful and exciting world of professional volleyball. So the format for today's episode, similar to something I did a couple weeks ago, is that this morning I put out an option for people to ask questions on my Instagram page, and I got a ton of responses, really great reception, looking forward to answering these. So if you're interested in having your question answered next time, make sure to check that out. Probably I'm going to try and do every other Wednesday. So check that out next Wednesday if you want your question answered. But for those of you that did get your questions in, I'm going to try and get to all of them. We'll see how much time it takes. And as always, if you want more volleyball content, remember to check out 51vb.com, where I kind of congregate all my podcast videos, articles, and everything else that I do. All right, so the first question I'm going to respond to, it's kind of a combination of questions because a few people had similar ones, and that's, what is my favorite player right now, and what is my favorite player that's not on a team that I like? And this was asked by Robert Luden, who is a very engaged member of the 5-1 Volleyball fan base, and Mahi Rumamura, who will probably have to correct me because I know he'll be listening to this. He also asked what their favorite player is, and then Presit Daru asked what my favorite player was growing up. So first, my favorite player that's not on a team I follow, and I'm going to call my team is Team Canada Volleyball. So I'm going to try, and all those guys are basically my favorite players. So I'm going to try and answer guys that are not part of Team Canada. And I couldn't really pick just one. So I'll give you like 10 or 12 or so that I just love watching every time they're on TV. That's Wilfredo Leon, Trevor Cleveno, Protop Saltis, a really short, great outside hitter that plays on Fredrikshofen. Grebennikov, obvious choice, just insane to watch every time he takes the court. Domenico Cavaccini, who plays in the Italian Super League, is an Italian libero. And other than Grebennikov, he's like one of the coolest players to watch in terms of just getting like absolutely ridiculous digs. Loves to kick the ball, probably a former soccer player or something. Micah Christensen and Benjamin Taniuti, I think, are just absolute magicians at the setter position. Kuba Kochanowski, just an absolute incredible young middle, really gets after the ball, really physical guy. Michael Seda, who probably not all of you have heard of, is an American setter playing in Chamonix this season, who's just one of the most aggressive setters I've ever seen. He loves to hit the ball onto just absolutely lefty, and he absolutely cranks the ball onto. Really fun player to watch. Yuji Nishida, who I've done a YouTube video on. 6'1 opposite, just it's crazy that he's able to play at that level despite being so short. And then Dmitry Mazursky. And then on the women's side, I love watching Paulu Iguanu and Isabel Hayek. Two like really great, young, physical players who just are absolutely beasts at hitting and blocking and most other skills, to be honest. As for the players I enjoyed watching growing up, probably a few of you can relate to this, but watching YouTube videos of Lionel Marshall was just crazy. And I love that he's still playing too, but that dude could jump out of the gym. That one highlight where it's somebody sending a free ball over and he jumps out of the back row to hit it as a pipe. Probably, I think that's secretly what actually got me into high-level volleyball to begin with. And I also loved watching Dante Amaral. I remember playing NBA 2K games when I was younger, and I would create Dante Amaral as my creative player. Just an absolute legend. And he just was playing until recently too. He just retired this season. Got a couple questions about the best players at certain positions. I think people like to ask my opinion on this because of that those top 10 players at each position series I did on YouTube. So Sidic Kechabre asked who is the best opposite. And I think I still have to go with Maxim Mikhailov of Zenit Kazan. He's having an absolutely beastly season in Russia this year. He's at one of the leading scorers of the entire league while hitting at 60% kill percentage. It's just ridiculous. He's been doing this for like a decade, if not more, continues to be probably, I'm going to make a video on this at some point, but arguably the greatest indoor volleyball player of all time, in my opinion. And the other guys you have to consider, Wallace, Zaitsev, Bartosz Kurek, Atanasijevic, and Matt Anderson, if you consider him an opposite. And Josh O'Coin asks, who's the best setter right now? And I'm still going with Micah Christensen. We saw recently, which I'll go over this later, but how Modena's absolutely collapsed since he left their team. And of course, you could go with any of these five guys as the best setter in the world, but the other guys are Taniuti, Decheco, Bruno, and Simone Gianelli. A really cool question that I also want to make a video about at some point from Gray Discourage. He asks, would a Cuban national team with all those superstars, you know, all those guys who defected and aren't allowed to play on Cuba, guys, you know who I'm talking about, Juan Torino, Simon, Leal, those guys, would they be like, would they be the best team in the world and win an Olympic gold medal, world championship gold medal? And my answer to that, okay, let's look at what this hypothetical team would be before we answer that question. So I put Leon and Juan Torino on the outsides. I mean, you have Leal and Camejo sitting on the bench. You could start any of those guys as long as you have Leon in there. Obviously, that would be the best offensive outside combo out of any of the teams in the world by like an absolute mile. Then you have Hierzulo at center position, who's still playing at a high level. Another Cuban legend. Fernando Hernandez, you could put it opposite, although you could easily put Leal or Camejo. I would say even, Camejo at opposite too. Doesn't matter. Any of those three guys would be really good. And then you obviously one of your middle blockers would be Robert Landy-Simon. And then there's a couple other keeping middles playing pro. It's generally not their strongest position, but David Feel, who plays on Skrel Beltatov, could be a good player to put in that second middle. Or Isabel Mesa, who played on the Cuban national team for a few years, could put him there as well. And then at libero, the current guy is actually still playing on the Cuban national team, Yonder Garcia. It's a player I actually really like. Great defender. But honestly, for that last middle position, libero, it really doesn't matter who you have because your outside's an opposite and center are just so ridiculously stacked. I believe that team would in fact win the Olympic gold as long as you probably gave them like a few months to train together. Maybe if you just said, okay, you're playing in the Olympics tomorrow, maybe they might struggle then. But if they had any training at all, I think they would take it. Jacob's Fun Party asks, how do players get over language barriers when they're playing clubs in different countries? And I think it depends on, first of all, what language you speak and where you're playing. In some countries, like in Germany and Poland, a lot of people actually do speak English, and some clubs even run their practices in English. There's also a few English-speaking coaches, but then it's places like Italy or Russia. They try and get you to, especially in Italy, they want to get you to learn the local language so you're able to interact with the media and fans and stuff. So it really depends on what club you're in. Oftentimes, if you're playing in one of the Asian leagues, China, Korea, or Japan, usually there's only one or two foreign players who are generally speak English, so they'll get a translator for you, so you can participate that way. And a lot of times, clubs will recruit players from countries in groups of two or three. So that's why you see like some teams will have like two or three Canadians on the roster, or two or three Americans, or maybe they'll have a couple Brazilians, or a couple people from Argentina, or like two Latvians, or like, anyway, you get the idea. It's more helpful if they can participate in pairs sometimes. And also, even if you don't never become fluent in the language, you pick up on the volleyball terminology pretty quickly. So if you understand like ball in, out, spike, set, serve, all those words are pretty easy to learn. So if you understand those, you can usually understand what your coach is saying for the most part. And then odds are you'll have one or two teammates who are able to speak English and translate the rest for you. Got a question from Vivek MG10, and he is asking, could professional volleyball players make a living just by playing volleyball? And the answer is yes, but it really depends on where you're playing and how good of a player you are. The guys, the big names, you know, the Mazurskis, Grebennikovs, Taylor Sanders, Matt Andersons, those guys, yeah, they're making a pretty good living, especially if you're playing for a top team in Italy, especially, but also in Poland, Russia, and Brazil sometimes. They make a pretty good living. Like, they're not making NBA player money, but they're doing all right for themselves. And a lot of them are even able to afford like the pretty luxurious living. And then on the other side of the spectrum, and this is some of the guys I played with, basically just go play overseas as a almost like extended vacation. Probably not going to bring any money home, but while they're over there, the club will pay for their food, their like where they live, their car, and they basically just get to take a couple years off after school as a vacation, go play pro volleyball, come back and kind of, you know, start their real life. And there's obviously a whole lot in between those two, where some guys, you know, make a decent living, but nothing crazy. But yes, the answer is, I mean, it wouldn't be a professional volleyball if players didn't actually make any money playing. Hawks in the Six. I really like that name. I'm not sure if it's like a Humber volleyball reference or something else, but they ask, what's more competitive, club team, so like professional teams, or national teams. My answer to that, I think, is club teams are generally more competitive. Like, I mean, you look at like the top club teams like Zenit Kazan, Perugia, Lubice Vitanova. Like those clubs are stacked with some of the best players from different national teams. Like you have Angapet, Mikhailov, and Matt Anderson on the same team. Or in Perugia, you have Wilfredo Leon, Osmani Wantarena, and Marco Podrashin and Luciano Tocheco. So like literally like some of the best players from like three or four different countries. And those are good countries of volleyball too, are playing on the same team. But obviously, like if Brazil was going to play like a mid-tier Italian club team, yeah, Brazil would probably crush them. But I think the absolute highest level of volleyball is probably always going to be the club level, just because you're able to pull from such a bigger talent pool. And those top clubs are always going to have kind of attract the best players. It's kind of an unequal sport in that sense. Peter Kajmerik is asking, I like this one, what would be the perfect format for a future world championships? He's probably seen me on my YouTube videos or one of my other podcasts rant about how like absolutely laughably terrible the format for this year's world championships was. So saying that it was so bad, I would say there's like hundreds of different formats that would be better than what we were subject to this year. But for what I would choose personally, here's a fun format that I came up with before recording. Say 30 teams. So increase the team slightly because there were some really good teams, I thought, especially from Europe last time that weren't able to qualify. That would have been great additions to the tournament. And you do five pools of six. And then the top three teams from each of those six pools advance. And then you have like a fun wild card game to determine the last spot. Who doesn't love a wild card game? And then you would have everyone else get a rest day while that wild card game is going on. And then the main thing is, as long as you have a 16 team single elimination tournament, that's like the main thing that was terrible about this year's world championships. Like you had like this weird second pool phase, and then you had a final six, and then you had another final four. Super weird. Not a fan of that format at all. So a 16 team single elimination tournament would just make all those last few games super exciting, have more of a potential for an upset maybe, which adds excitement to things, but still you're playing enough games where one game can't ruin your entire season. I think that would make for a much more exciting game for the viewers. I think the players would enjoy it because they have to play slightly fewer games. It's not as much of a gauntlet. And like I think it's just a win-win-win for everyone. And I hope the FAVB is listening to this podcast, because this is a great idea. You should jump on it. All right. So those were some questions more generally about the professional volleyball world. And I got a decent amount of questions about Italy and then one about Poland. So I'll answer those now. Micah Skinner asks, how do you think the Milano versus Modena battle will go, especially with all the reinforcements? And the reinforcements he's referring to, there's been rumors that Modena is trying to pick up another outside hitter to help him with a late season push. And the one player that's really been rumored going to them is Kevin Tilley. And also Mikhail Kubiak has been linked to them as well. And I think Milano versus Modena is going to be an absolutely epic first round series. Definitely the one I'm looking forward to the most. I think both teams are pretty evenly matched. Right now, they're exactly tied in the standings at 4-5. Milano, I think, is going to be a club to watch in the next few years. They just have a new arena. They just showed their new practice facility off on Instagram today. It looks absolutely beautiful. The club clearly has good sponsors and a lot of money. So I think next year, like Riccardo Lucarelli has been rumored to go to the be joining the club next year. So you could see some really exciting stuff there. But as for this year, I think, it depends on who they actually get as reinforcements. Kevin Tilley is a great player, but I'm not sure if he's like the massive upgrade that they need, especially Modena's passing and defense is already pretty decent. It's on the offensive side where they've been struggling. I don't know how much Kevin Tilley adds there, especially we've seen him. He's been struggling a bit in the Chinese League playoffs. And it also depends on if Micah Christensen comes back and how healthy he will be. And this actually kind of answers another question that someone asked, which is, how is Modena going to play without Micah, by Anthony J. Monk. And I think the answer to that question is they're pretty bad without Micah Christensen. We saw them have one of the worst losses of this entire decade to Lubice Vitanova last weekend, where I think the total score is like 75 to like 46, just absolutely destroyed. I don't think Wessel Kiemink is doing a terrible job, but it's just really hard when you've been playing with a bench and practices all season and you're like, okay, here's you have to go to the starting lineup, especially with guys as demanding as Zaitsev and Julio Velasco. It's a tough position to be thrust into. And also, it's not entirely Kiming's fault, because I think the wings on Modena are not playing up to their standards regardless of who their setter is. Especially we've seen Ivan Zaitsev the last couple months has not been his usual self. Bednar's just had some great moments here and there, but also has his games where he's struggled a lot. Tiernan out has been consistent, but he alone can't carry that entire offense. That's not really his role on Slovenia or on any of the past Modena teams. No still asks, what's your opinion on Jiří Kovář? And it's actually kind of funny you ask, because I think Kovář is one of the most like unique players, maybe not in the best way, but he's a really interesting player because he's quite tall. I think he's like 6'8 or 6'9, really, really big body. But his best skills are passing and blocking, which is a combination of skills you don't really see too often. Like, really good defensive player is going to help your serve receive. But then he really struggles in attacking. Like, he's not really athletic at all. Not the smartest hitter. So I don't know. He's perfect in the role he's in now, where he's off the bench. He can pass for you. He can block for you. There's not a lot of players. Usually players who are good passers are not good blockers and vice versa. So it's rare that you have a combination of both skills in one player. And of course, he's a Lube legend. He's been there forever. So I don't know how many more years he has left as an elite player. They're probably going to want a replacement for him sooner rather than later. It's probably why they signed Riley Barnes this year before he got injured. And then they signed Brandon Sander, but we all knew if you watch NCAA last year, he wasn't going to be good enough for the Italian Super League. So moving on to Poland for a second here. Vanny S. Regina. I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce that right, Vanny. Love your comments, by the way. This girl comments on almost all my videos and has really insightful things to say. So if you're looking for good comments on my videos, check out what she's saying. She asks, what are you thinking about Resovia coming back? And for those of you who don't know, the Polish playoff race is really heating up, much more than the Italian playoff race. Right now, there's only six teams that make the playoffs in Poland. Right now, Katowice is in sixth place with 30 ranking points. Skra Belchatov, yeah, that's right. The Skra Belchatov, who won the title last year and is consistently one of the best Polish teams, they're currently sitting in seventh place with 27 ranking points. And then Asseco Resovia, who Vanny is talking about here, is in eighth place with 26 points. So there are actually some important games today. Resovia beat another playoff hopeful, Gdansk, 3-1, gained 3 ranking points, and pretty much sent Gdansk to the shadow realm in terms of their playoff odds. And Skra Belchatov played for Sava, a team that's firmly in the playoffs, I believe, second place right now, tied with Jastrzębski Vigil in third place. And Skra beat Vrsava 3-2 in a really cool match. Kuba Kochanowski with an absolutely massive block on Bartosz Kurek to end that game. Really fun game to watch. And thoughts on Resovia coming back? I mean, honestly, with Skra's injuries, I think they're the best team out of Katowice, Skra, and Resovia. I think they have the most talent on the roster, and they seem to have found their best lineup with Rafael Buszek starting, Kawika Shoji starting, Luke Perry starting, David Smith starting. That lineup seems to be working really well, especially after today's game. But Katowice does have a bit of a lead. I mean, I think they've played one more game as well, but we'll see if Resovia can keep it up. It's amazing if they come back in the last part of the season. And you can never count out Skra too. If they have Shelpa come back or Vlajli come back, they're going to be the favorite to make the playoffs as well. A lot of my fan base is Canadian, and as am I, so we've got a couple Team Canada questions coming up. Mark is a cat guy, great handle by the way, says, do you think Kofi is going to start on Team Canada anytime soon? For those of you who don't know, Kofi in this question is referring to Danen Kofi Jima, currently playing in UCLA, California. He's a great middle blocker. Insanely athletic, jumps just out of the gym, really strong attacker. He's having a great season at UCLA, even though they're not having like the best season as a team. So I think he could play on the team right now, if I'm being honest, especially like from an offensive perspective. We've seen his serve is actually a huge weapon this year, which is I think one of his question marks earlier on in his college career. And we've seen it, like he has one of the best serves in college volleyball. and he is by far the most efficient attacker in college volleyball. It helps playing with a setter like Mika Maa, but he's just like an incredible player. A lot of people thought he would be on the team last summer and was not selected. So I think there were a few reasons for this. One is that simply that, I mean, the middles that Team Canada has, Lucas Van Berkel, Arthur Schwark, Graham Vigras, I mean, they're already very good players in themselves. And, you know, and as you know, a lot of coaches of national teams like to keep a core group together in like each Olympic cycle. So generally, they kind of pick guys in 2017, the year after the Olympics, and then they try and keep the team mostly the same. So they get a lot of reps together in preparation for the next Olympics, in this case, 2020. So that could be part of it. From a skill standpoint, I think he's like already incredible attacker, which would probably be, I would say, like very competitive on an international level in terms of attacking, and I think serving as well. Doesn't really can't play back row defense that well, but that's not a hugely important thing for a middle. But the part that he's struggling with right now a bit is his blocking. This is what I've heard anyway. When I see him play, I actually think he's quite a good blocker. He gets a lot of kill blocks. He's doing quite well in the NCAA, but there's a lot of questions about him reading the block and getting out and blocking technique at the next level. In my opinion, I think he'll be fine. I think that's an overrated criticism of his. And then the third reason that people have speculated maybe why he wasn't selected is that some people question whether he's a rapper as well, going under the name Kofi. I actually quite like his music. He's a fairly talented producer and rapper, really kind of Toronto Drake inspired stuff. But some people wonder if he's going to pursue that rather than volleyball in the future. And obviously Team Canada wants someone who's going to go play club overseas and really put 100% of their efforts in volleyball. The days are kind of over where a lot of the players on the national team were part-time guys. You really have to be playing club at a high level and be playing, you know, dedicating your time to being a pro athlete if you want to make it in the highest level of volleyball, especially on a team that's ranked 6th in the world right now in Team Canada. So we'll see. I'm hoping he's able to figure out a way to pursue both music and volleyball. But I really hope he's able to play volleyball still, because he's an absolutely ridiculous talent. And I think he could be one of like the greatest middle blockers in our entire sport. And then again, we have Micah Skinner asking, which club do you think Eric Lepke will end up in? And if you don't know Eric Lepke, I think I've talked about him on the podcast before, but he's probably the best prospect, or one of the best prospects, in Canadian volleyball right now. Like, really talented player, absolutely lighting it up in our domestic Canadian University League. And I've heard that he's already gotten, after his sophomore season at Trinity Western, that he already got offers from some very elite professional clubs in Italy. So when he does decide to go pro, I mean, he already has offers from good clubs on the table. I can only imagine they're going to be better as he gets progresses closer to graduation. So I think Eric Lepke is going to have his pick of which club to go to. I don't necessarily think he can go to like a Modena or Perugia and start right away. So you can either take that route and go to an absolutely top tier club team and, you know, spend a couple of years coming off the bench, or you can go to maybe a mid tier Italian club or a good Polish club and start right away. I don't know what his priorities are, but I know that he's going to be on a really good club. I mean, he's pretty much everything you want out of a modern outside hitter. He's good size, really good athlete, skilled passer, absolutely beastly server. So Eric will be fine. All right, now we have some quick hitters that probably won't go into more in depth, but kind of more miscellaneous questions that didn't fit in any of the categories I talked about earlier. Miral Tunovic asks, do you play professional volleyball? I do not, no, unless you count winning local cash tournaments playing pro, but I'm assuming you don't. Rob Sha03 asks, do I have any tips for middle blockers? I don't play middle. I haven't really ever had coaching as a middle blocker, so there's probably better people to ask his tips, but the generic middle advice: communicate with your setter, communicate with your outsides on blocking, move your feet, try and get to know setter tendencies. All good advice for middle blockers. And remember, you're a middle blocker. Your number one job is to block. I think some younger middle blockers want to focus on the attack. They want to be the one banging balls, but The more important job for a middle blocker is always to block. Jahan Omari is asking, how do you do a jump serve? Well, you toss the ball up and you hit it. But I don't know, like any volleyball skill, you just want to put a lot of reps in. Generally, anyone who's a good jump server is also a good spiker. So if you practice your spiking a lot, it'll translate a lot to your jump serve. But just make sure you really have your toss down. You can just practice your toss without hitting it a bunch. Just practice your timing. And eventually you'll become a good jump server. Although as far as sports skills go, it is an extremely hard skill to learn. So don't get too frustrated if it takes you years to learn, to be honest. Logan Mueller asks what my thoughts on the new Mikasa ball is. And I mean, it's cool to look at. I like the that they're trying to have more innovation and technology behind it. I mean, it's impossible to say until you've played with it quite a bit. So I'm looking forward to actually playing with it. I'll probably order one right away. I mean, I think the current MVA 200 is pretty much the perfect volleyball. So I'm not sure how they can improve on it, but I'm looking forward to see what they have in store. And the last question of day from Epic Joy Volleyball. They ask, how do you get permission to post copyrighted videos? They're awesome. Well, thank you for saying that they're awesome. And the answer to your copyrighted videos question on my Instagram, I'm going to give you a quote by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, who I believe is the best commissioner by far in professional sports right now. He says, the way we looked at it, we've been incredibly protective of our live game rights. But for the most part, highlights are also marketing. We have always believed fan sharing highlights via social media is a great way to drive interest and excitement for the NBA. Our enforcement efforts are not aimed at fans, but rather are focused on the unauthorized live streaming of our games. So I think that's a great way to put it. And it's telling that Adam Silver, I think an incredible commissioner, has really overseen a ton of growth in the NBA recently. I think he really nails it when it comes to sports highlights. I think for the most part, they're generally just free marketing for whatever league, especially in volleyball, where a lot of stuff is behind a paywall. And really, the average fan doesn't really know where to watch or how to watch it. I think sports highlights, I think, honestly, every volleyball league should be posting way more highlights than they do right now, because it is a really good highlight sport as well. I think really only basketball, I think, is the better suited sports when it comes to highlights. So I think it's basically free marketing for them. Yes, if they wanted to take the videos down, absolutely they could. And I have had a few videos taken down by request from the leagues. Totally fine with that. I'm not complaining. Everyone's entitled to protect their copyrights. But I think any league that's looking towards the long term, looking towards the future of sports, and has a smart marketing department behind them, they know that fans posting highlights is not a substitute for watching the actual games. And is really just an awesome free marketing tool. Just look at the NBA compared to the MLB, which is the baseball league in North America, and the NFL. The NBA is growing much faster than the other two leagues because they're the league that's, you know, embraced YouTube videos, embraced social media highlights, and is not desperately has a field of lawyers trying to take down copyrights. So Epic Joy, that's what I think about the state of sports highlights right now. Sports media in the digital age is a topic that's I feel really passionately about. And if you have any more thoughts on my answer, I would love to discuss it further with you. And I got a great question when I was recording this by Saku Saku Isaku, who's saying, any young players you are paying attention to for each league? And yes, I love watching volleyball prospects. I love analyzing young players, thinking about how they could grow. I think that's a great question I'm going to leave for the next podcast, because there are just so many absolutely incredible young players that I think are going to turn into our future stars that I would love to talk about. But I would like to get a list together and do some research before I answer that. So keep your ears on alert for the next 5-1 Volleyball podcast, where one of the questions will definitely be some of the best young players in volleyball right now. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. For all of you that asked questions, I hope I answered your questions sufficiently and gave you a bit more insight into the topic you were wondering about. Just remember, check out my other stuff. Obviously, you know, the Instagram, if you're listening to this probably because you ask questions, 51vb.com has everything, all my content congregated. And then the volleyball YouTube channel, 51 Volleyball, doing a video on Sam Daru, currently in the process of recording and editing that. So if you're a fan of Sam Daru, give the YouTube channel 5-1 Volleyball a look in the next couple days. All right. I hope everyone is having a good week, and that's it for now.